This presentation has been previously broadcast.
The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
This week, the House passed a sweeping Election Reform and Voting Rights Act, but the bill faces a steep climb in the Senate. The action comes after the 2020 election was met with record voter turnout that led to the Democrats' takeover of the White House and the Senate. Voter access was a central issue, especially in states like Georgia and Arizona, where the presidential and Senate races were tight.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
So I don't know if you know a whole lot about the Voting Rights Act reform. We could certainly talk about that. CBS News mentioned it, but it's something that I'll bring you up to speed on. It's good to be with you. Thanks for joining me. Dr. Paul Kengor is going to be stopping by. I'll tell you what, it's always a fun conversation with him. If you want to get into the conversation, put this number in your speed dial if you are new. It's 888-914-9149, and it is good all day. We'd love to have you join the conversation. So here's what's happening today. The House, they passed a measure that the Democrat leadership somehow or other thinks is going to resurrect the Equal Rights Amendment. The ERA was originally passed by Congress back in 72, and then it was sent to the states for ratification, but there was a deadline imposed on that ratification. I think the deadline was March of 79. And within those 7 years, proponents could not get the 38 states that were required to ratify it. So they fell 3 states short. And ever since then, there have been all these kinds of legal actions taken to have the congressionally imposed deadline removed, all of which have failed. So some states have even rescinded the original ratification of the amendment. So the House voted 222 to 204 to remove the deadline. So now the measure goes to the Senate, where it faces filibuster. We talked about filibusters in the past. I'll touch on them briefly here. I'll share this with you. This comes from NPR. So what's the filibuster all about? You might say, I hear that word, I'm not quite sure. You know, I know you've seen it portrayed in movies, but you may not know the actual history. Let me give you I'll give you a little history lesson right now, if you will, on the filibuster. Listen.
People regarded it as the nuclear weapon, just the most extreme part of your arsenal as a senator. You only used it for one or two issues that were absolutely the most important thing to you, like Southern senators and civil rights. The filibuster came about because the Senate has never really had very many rules that they really followed, and senators were allowed to extend debate for hours, for days, forever. And as a result, they were able to kill legislation without ever having a vote on it. The House and Senate have always had their very different procedures and very different voting procedures because the House is so much larger, so many more members of the House. And the Senate was always a kind of exclusive club where people got to know each other much more personally, served for longer periods of time, and considered each other to be colleagues. So over the generations in the 1800s, senators were allowed to debate things at any length they wanted and talk bills to death if they wished, and there wasn't any restriction on that until about the time of the First World War, 100 years ago. And when they did start to restrict it, it took a vote of 2/3 of all senators to invoke cloture and stop a filibuster. Filibusters were rare, votes of cloture were even more rare, and the filibuster was a very powerful weapon. Eventually, as part of a reform in the 1970s, the Democrats, when they were in the majority, reduced the number of votes that it took to shut down a filibuster and proceed to a vote to just 3/5 of the Senate, or 60 votes. That made the filibuster seem more controlled, but it had a rather unexpected and pernicious, in some people's minds, effect. When it went down to 3/5 or just 60 votes, it didn't seem nearly as nuclear a weapon. In fact, it eventually became like a sidearm the cowboys wore, like a six-shooter on their hip when they walked into a saloon in an old Western movie. Everybody had one, everybody could see you had one, and it was like a constant threat to use it, but you didn't actually have to use it for it to have its desired effect. People used it to sort of threaten that they might extend debate without ever actually having to do it. And nowadays, any substantial action is subject to at least a threat of a filibuster.
I thought that was such a great explanation. So what's going to happen with the filibuster? Joe Biden was clear about what was going to happen. He said this, I think it was in an ABC News special, that he's actually open to filibuster reform. Here's what President Biden's saying.
Aren't you going to have to choose between preserving the filibuster and advancing your agenda?
Yes. But here's the choice. I don't think you have to eliminate the filibuster. You have to do it what it used to be when I first got to the Senate and back in the old days when you used to be around there. And that is that a filibuster, you had to stand up and command the floor. And you had to keep talking alone. You couldn't call for, you know, no one could say, you know, quorum call. Once you stopped talking, you lost that, and someone could move in and say, I move the question of. So you got to work for the filibuster.
So you're for that reform. You're for bringing back the talking filibuster.
I am. That's what it was supposed to be. Look, I think, don't hold me to the numbers, George, but I think between 1960 and 2000, there were like, I'm making this number up, I don't know. There were like, 50 filibusters. And now they're like 200 since then. Since that
just put a hold
changed.
On it, that's it.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so the idea, it almost is getting to the point where there's, you know, democracy's having a hard time functioning.
All right. So, you know, we'll see what happens with the filibuster. Just on one other note, and I want to bring Dr. Kengor into the conversation. There's another similar bill that's getting its first hearing in the Senate. The Judiciary Committee held a hearing today on the Equality Act, which is, well, it's being opposed by every conservative group out there, including the U.S. bishops. Cardinal Timothy Dolan of New York today wrote a public, you can check this out, at Public Discourse. You can check out what he wrote. He said, under the Equality Act, a religious service provider is not protected by Religious Freedom Restoration Act if it discriminates on the basis of gender identity. So if a Catholic woman, if a Catholic woman's shelter decides that it would be best not to house a biological man self-identifying as a woman in the same place as the woman who'd been the victim of domestic abuse, that ministry would not be protected under the Equality Act. Kind of a simple example, right? That's the kind of stuff that we're facing if this bill passes. Fortunately, it too will be facing a filibuster. So maybe it won't. You know, there are people who are pressuring some Democrats in the Senate to get rid of the filibuster. They've been pressuring Joe Manchin. He's the senator from West Virginia, and Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema, I believe it is. Or is it Kristen or Kyrsten? I can never get her first name right. Anyway, Senator Sinema. And both have been, both said, look, they oppose dropping the rules. So, but Manchin has said that he might now go for a rule change that requires a filibuster to mean a long speech on the floor. So President Biden had also supported leaving it intact, as you heard, but he's suddenly changing his tune to go along with Manchin. And the minority leader, Mitch McConnell, today is warned that, hey, the Democrats, if they change that rule, it's going to come back to haunt them in ways that they won't like at all. So the battle continues. Here for some perspective is Dr. Paul Kengor, professor of political science at Grove City College in Pennsylvania, and the author of his latest book. He's a number of them. You can check him out, From Dupes to the Devil and Karl Marx. The Devil and Karl Marx is his latest, an excellent read. You can check him out online. Doctor, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Drew. Good to be back.
Appreciate your patience. You know, a lot to talk about here, just because I talked about the filibuster. Let's hit this and move on. That rule's been in place since the origins of the Senate in the late 18th century. Is that the rule that made the Senate different from the House? How do you see it? Do you think it should go away? Do you think it should stay? Do you think it'll be used as a hammer in the future? I mean, what's your take on all this?
Well, yeah, I actually agree with President Biden on this one. I think, as he said, I mean, you don't have to eliminate the filibuster. But as he's put it, you have to stand up and keep talking, right? You know, bring back the talking filibuster. You can't really kind of cheat and wimp out and suddenly, you know, call for a quorum or a break or and get yourself a breather. I mean, you know, man up, right? You know, woman up. Get up there and stand up there for 12 or 15 hours. I mean, people that are listening right now, think of the movie with Jimmy Stewart, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, right? Where at the end he's got the raspy voice and Jimmy Stewart even said later on in talking about that movie that he went to his physician and he said, hey, tell me how do I give myself a sore throat? Because for the movie, the acting part, yeah, he wanted to really play it right. He wanted to lose his voice toward the end. And, you know, he sort of collapses there and there's this dramatic scene and Claude Rains, who's the senior senator, right? Claude Rains was the guy in Casablanca with Bogart at the end of the movie, right? Yeah. So Claude Rains is the senior center. So it's a dramatic moment because it's a real physical feat, and you know it's a political skill. It's something that's gone on for a long time. And if you wimp out on it and you make it easy and you make the possibility that you could have hundreds of filibusters a year, then, you know, is it really a true filibuster? So this might seem like a kind of, nerdy poli-sci thing that we're talking about here, but it's something that goes back to the parliamentary procedures, if you will, that have been, you know, part of America, Americana, the American system of government for a long, long time. That clip that you played, did you say that was from NPR? That was very good.
Yeah.
That was a good overview.
Yeah, I liked it too. You know, Senator McConnell warned that without the rule, the U.S. would almost have whiplash and watching laws come and go. Is there truth in that? Is he exaggerating the case? I mean, I could see that happening. You know, there would be this tick for tack going on.
Yeah, I don't know, maybe. But you know, it's part of politics and how things have been done. And you know, part of debate is going up there, and if it is debate, but I guess right. A part of the debate process, the debate procedure, and some people, to be fair, right, see it as a kind of a gimmicky thing. You're really not debating here. You're coming up with a way to delay a vote, to delay an action. So you know, it's not your job to figure out a way to stall this whole thing. But on the other hand, it's again something that's been done for a long time, and like. President Biden said, if you're going to do it right, do it the old fashioned way. And then, you know, if you've talked for 12 hours and you're spent and your time's up, you know, then you're done. Then you move on. Right. You know, then it would be a real filibuster in the way that we've always understood filibuster. These modern politicians today, what do they want to do? Go back to their office and the air conditioning and, you know, have a little bit of wine and turn on Fox News and MSNBC and, you know, go home, you know, take a shower, go to the gym, you know, go take a nap, you know, come on. Give me the old-fashioned Jimmy Stewart deal. That's what I want to see.
No, I got it. Hey, let's talk about the Equal Rights Amendment. That's been dead for almost a half a century now, 42 years. Has any judge ruled in favor of rescinding the deadline that Congress established for it? And maybe you can address why the House leadership would think that an 18-vote majority would be able to, resurrect it when a two-thirds majority is required to pass an amendment. I mean, what's up with this? And it never seems to be able to make it to life.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a good way to put it. And what was it? I think it was originally 35 or 38 states. I can't remember.
38 states were required to ratify it.
Yeah. Yeah, and it fell short by two or three states. You know, this is funny. This is very ironic because I was talking about this today with my students at Grove City College in the course of the fact that, you know, Drew, I'm pretty sure that this is true nationally now. The majority of college students are women. Women.
Yeah.
And there are now more women than men. We get more women applicants than we do men. There are more women in the workforce in white-collar jobs now than there are men. I mean, a lot of the men are going into trades and technical schools, sometimes the military. They're taking blue-collar jobs. They're doing air conditioning, plumbing, working on bridges and so forth. So women have totally advanced here naturally. They've done this naturally without the help of the government and federal intervention by the government. This was something that probably the most famous female conservative of the 20th century, maybe ever, Phyllis Schlafly of Eagle Forum, who was a very devout Catholic. This was something that Phyllis Schlafly said in fighting the ERA in the 1970s, that if you really want women to advance, you know, women can do this on their own. They don't need the government to come in enforce these things artificially, which is just going to make people bitter. It's going to create resentment. And now here we are today, and I'd have to look this up. I don't have this wrong. I hope I don't have this right, but we might even be at a point now where the majority of people entering in medical schools are women.
Wow.
Quite possibly even law school. And you didn't need government intervention through some legislation to make that happen. It happened naturally, and you know that's the way that it should happen. So I think that the era of, pun intended, I guess, ERA, I think it's probably over. But now they're on to, yes, this differently focused Equality Act. And as Cardinal Dolan said, I mean, the big problem with this Equality Act is the current bill that's out there, at least the one that passed the House on basically a party line vote. Religious service providers are not protected under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So you can't get an exception to this by claiming your faith. And what the political secular left is doing now is they're saying things like, oh, well, you can't use your faith as an argument for discrimination, right? You can't do that, right? You can't cite your faith here to discriminate against somebody who's going through, whatever gender thing or issue or whatever else. Well, no, sorry, guys, but we have this thing in America called the First Amendment, right? The first words of which are about religious freedom, right? Religious liberty, freedom of conscience. Liberals have this sort of totem pole, this sort of hierarchy of rights where they take certain rights and elevate them above other rights, and then they take others like religious freedom and put them at the bottom of the barrel or ignore them altogether. I mean, that's not the way it works. There are a number of different rights, competing rights. Among them is religious freedom and religious liberty. And, if liberals really want to be liberal and really be about rights, well, you've got to try to honor religious rights and religious freedom along with the other rights. But that's not what they're doing. You're using your religious rights to discriminate against our transgender rights. No. You've got to be more thoughtful about this.
It's so well said. Such a great example. Hey, if you want to join us, guest today, Dr. Paul Kangor, the number, 888-914-9149. Feel free to sound off, ask your questions, join the conversation. Hey, to your point and to your observation, Doctor, I want to thank Patrick Alog, who's on our one of the producers of the show today. He said, he did quick research. In 2019, there were 50.5% women and 49.4% men in medical school. So you're right. There are more men, more women now becoming doctors than men. Law school, he says, a report from the association, that came from the Association of Medical Colleges. Women going to law school, 50.3% law school grads. This is 2017, 51.3% of those are currently enrolled. So again, the majority numbers weighing in favor of women. As a university professor, and I know that's the case, it used to be sometimes, that men dominated in college, and women sometimes just went to college to try to find a future husband. Now the reverse is the case. There's more women in college than anything else, or university. Why are we seeing that? What do you make for the shift?
Well, it's interesting. In the time I've been at Grove City College, I got here in 1997, so going on 25 years, and I just look around the faculty room, the faculty hall during our faculty meetings, and the number of now that are women compared to when I first came, it's quite remarkable. And it's happened at my college, Grove City College, not through a quota system, not through affirmative action, but the fact that there are just now more women out there with PhDs, Drew, right? So, they apply for jobs, and when you get applicants, half of them are women. So it would just naturally follow that more women would get hired into those positions. So all of this was done, without the government forcing it and coercing it on people, right? And by the way, let me say this slightly off subject for women that are listening right now. Catholic women, younger women in particular, I always tell my female students, I think one of the best jobs in the world for a young woman is a college professor. And I know this from women that I've taught with, Catholic women that I've taught with, the flexibility that you have in a position like this, the ability to be able to, work from home, work at the college, raise a family. There's more flexibility, I think, for a woman in that position, and for a guy, for a man as well, than almost any other kind of, a high-end professional position that I could think of. That's certainly not true for being a doctor, right, an MD, or a lawyer, right? But it's definitely true for professors.
Well, let's do this, Doctor. I'm going to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll take a few phone calls. I want to talk about Brett Kavanaugh. As well, I know the FBI is facing allegations that Well, for their 2018 background check of them, we'll take a look at what happened there, what's now coming out, and a lot of other things. I'd love to get your take on the Equality Act. Of course, we got a $2 trillion bailout underway. Really, anything goes. It's open phones for Dr. Kangor today. Feel free to join the conversation. It's 888-914-9149. Just taking a look at what's happening in the country politically and culturally and so much more. I'll be right back.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
The mass is never boring if you know what's going on. Hi, this is Father Rocky with our 25th lesson on the mass. Now the great event of the Mass is about to take place, the miracle of the transubstantiation. As the Eucharistic prayer begins, everyone is standing. The priest invites the people to pray with him by saying, "The Lord be with you," and the people respond,
"And with your spirit."
If the people respond with energy and enthusiasm, it's a clear sign that they have faith and they really want to be there. And now begins the preface to the Eucharistic prayer. It's prayed by the priest alone, and it's the second longest prayer in the Mass after the Eucharistic prayer, and it changes daily and by the season, depending on the theme of the Mass. For instance, there are several different prefaces for Advent season, Christmas season, Lenten season, Easter season, saints, martyrs, virgins, pastors, and so forth.
Mass with Father Rocky, noon Central.
And join us for Class After Mass. Hi, I'm Cale Clark. It's The Faith Explained, 1230 Central every day on Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Males identifying as females using the women's locker room. Faith-based adoption and foster agencies required to place children with same-sex couples. And florists forced to fill orders for same-sex weddings. Critics tell me these are just a few of the potential results if the Equality Act becomes law.
Every American should be treated with dignity and respect, but our laws need to protect the constitutionally guaranteed rights that we have. Now, under the Equality Act, we will have a nationwide law, so we will see a proliferation of instances where Christians and others are being coerced to violate their beliefs in order to comply with such a law.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that's another issue I really want to try to stay on top of. You heard that the Equality Act is being heard by the Judiciary Committee. And how much of a chance does it have of being able to get passed by the Senate, assuming that the filibuster rule stays in place? That's something we could talk about. If you're not familiar with it, let me just give you a thumbnail. My guest today is Dr. Paul Kangor. Joe Biden and the Democrats, they're poised right now to pass what I believe really is the most radical piece of legislation that we've seen in a very long time. It's the most sweeping, transformative, radical law in our country right now, and it's on the brink of being enacted unless the American people stand up and say, hey, this has got to be defeated. The Equality Act, it's known as H.R. 5, all right? It would obliterate the legal recognition of biological sexes, the very concept of male and female, of man and woman, that would all be abolished. It would be here's the thing. It would be declared discriminatory. It would be declared oppressive under this bill. And it's not just a fundamental assault on what is reality. If you think about it, it really is an assault on human nature itself. And it does more than just designate a letter, you know, LGBTQ plus whatever, as a protected class. Shielding them from, let's say, discrimination from housing or employment, but it does more than that. Its goal is totalitarianism. It's totalitarian to oppose gender ideology, you know, to impose this on American life. They want to impose this on the culture. They want to indoctrinate your kids on it. And I'll tell you what, it'll have devastating consequences. It will be used, as Dr. Kangor was pointing out, to persecute other groups. I think it'll be used to, attack in a special way women and girls. You know, you can call it Biden's war on women. We've already seen, you know, what's happening in sports and a whole litany of other things. Dr. Kangor, what's your take on this? What do you think the future is here in the country for this bill, especially in light of the fact that, we have such split government right now, and we have those at the helms of the House, the Senate and the executive branch, all moving with a particular agenda.
Yeah, I'm thinking too, Drew, as you're talking about about this, about the effect on sports. And I read a piece, it was last week, either a Crisis Magazine or the American Spectator. And it was, if I get it right, I think it was Jackie Joyner Kersee who holds the record for women in the, what is it, maybe 400 or so, I can't remember what it is. And that was an amazing feat that she did, that she accomplished. And the stat that was in the article, and again, Spectator or Crisis Magazine, noted that every year, over 100 high school boys beat that time. Wow. Every year, over 100 high school boys beat that time. Somebody sent me a picture last week of a quote-unquote transgender boy. So this would be a biological boy who's running in a high school track meet, and he's running as a girl, and he's running with the girls, and he's out in front, he's leading, and the girl behind him has this horrible look on her face. She's in agony, and Drew, she's reaching out to grab the back of his shirt.
Yep.
She's so angry at him, right? It's like, you know, what are you doing? You know, this is not fair, right? We learn that as kids, this isn't fair, right? Feminist, this isn't fair. And it's not fair for this girl who trained like this to be losing. And in this case, she's not even getting smoked. She's losing by a few feet to somebody who just has bigger and stronger legs and bones. And there's nothing that she can do about it. And feminists are going to sit back and let this happen? Yeah. That's absolutely nice. Outrageous. But as President Biden said a year ago, right? Yeah, you know, this is the great civil rights issue of our time. So much so that he took Drew, your home state, my home state, Pennsylvania. He took our health secretary, Rachel Levine, who has a COVID-19 placed patients into nursing homes record in Pennsylvania. Maybe even as bad, if not maybe worse than what Andrew Cuomo did in New York. And he promoted Levine to assistant health secretary in his new administration. Why would he do that? What qualifications? Everyone in Pennsylvania is outraged at Levine because of the COVID-19 thing. Well, as Biden said in the announcement, this is a historic choice. It's a historic choice. Why? Because Rachel Levine is transgender, and that's why Biden did it.
Yep.
So we were talking about ERA in the last segment.
Yep.
This is actual quotas. This is actually picking people because of their gender identity rather than anything else. How ironic is that?
It's wacky. Doctor, I'll tell you what. We'll go to the phones. Paul in Minneapolis has been waiting. We'll grab him in a second. But first, I want to play for you a piece of audio that I know you're familiar with. Speaking of Rachel Levine. Dr. Levine, and I think it was Senator Rand Paul, had an exchange. Jake, when was this? A week or two ago? I remember we ran this. Probably about 2 weeks ago. If you're listening and didn't hear this, to Dr. Kangor's point, just listen to this exchange. We can talk about it. Listen.
Dr. Levine, do you believe that minors are capable of making such a life-changing decision as changing one's sex?
Well, Senator, thank you for your interest in this question. Transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field with robust research and standards of care that have been developed. And if I am fortunate enough to be confirmed as the Assistant Secretary of Health, I will look forward to working with you and your office and coming to your office and discussing the particulars of the standards of care for transgender medicine.
The specific question was about minors. Let's be a little more specific since you evaded the question. Do you support the government intervening to override the parent's consent to give a child puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, and/or amputation surgery of breasts and genitalia? You have said that you're willing to accelerate the protocols for street kids. I'm alarmed that poor kids with no parents who are homeless and distraught, you would just go through this and allow that to happen to a minor. I would hope that you would have compassion for Kira Bell, who's a 23-year-old girl who was confused with her identity. At 14, she read on the internet about something about transsexuals. She thought, well, maybe that's what I am. She ended up getting these puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones. She had her breasts amputated. But here's what ultimately she says now. And this is a very insightful decision from someone who made a mistake but was led to believe this was a good thing by the medical community. I made a brash decision as a teenager. as a lot of teenagers do, trying to find confidence and happiness, except now the rest of my life will be negatively affected, she said, adding that the medicalized gender transitioning was a very temporary, superficial fix for a very complex identity issue. What I'm alarmed at is that you're not willing to say absolutely minors shouldn't be making decisions to amputate their breast or to amputate their genitalia. For most of our history, we believe that minors don't have full rights and the parents need to be involved. So I'm alarmed that you won't say with certainty that minors should not have the ability to make the decision to take hormones that will affect them for the rest of their life. Will you make a more firm decision on whether or not minors should be involved in these decisions?
Senator, transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced field, and if confirmed to the position of Assistant Secretary of Health, I would certainly be pleased to come to your office and talk with you and your staff about the standards of care and the complexity of this field.
Oh my God.
Let it go into the record that the witness refused to answer the question.
Doctor, it drives me crazy. I mean, it sounds like that that answer was memorized. I'm going to repeat it regardless of what you say, your thoughts.
But Levine said it twice. Yeah, yes, Levine said it twice. Well, Senator, I would visit your office because transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced thing, and we would have a very nice conversation. And Rand Paul is saying, Dr. Levine, I want to know if you think it's okay for a 12-year-old boy without his parents' permission to go into somewhere and have his testicles removed, right? If a 16-year-old girl could go without her permission, she probably can't even get her ears pierced, right? If she can go and have her breasts cut off. Right. And of course, you know, these are the same liberals who say, well, I don't think she needs her parents' permission if she wants an abortion. Right. They're too young to get a tattoo, Drew. Right. Without the parents' permission. But they could pump hormones into their body to try to change their biology. And a lot of this comes from the organic crowd as well. Right. Just fill your body with all of these hormones. Dr. Levine, is that okay? Well, Senator, transgender medicine is a very complex and nuanced thing, and I think I would come to your office, and we would have a nice conversation.
Hilarious.
And so Rand Paul says, well, let it be known that Dr. Levine did not answer the question. And, Drew, if you could see the next day the response on social media to Rand Paul, I mean, he was portrayed as a gargoyle, right? I mean, what a hate monger. What a vicious man, right? Not people standing up and saying, well, you know, thankfully, finally, somebody with some common sense and courage. You know, and by the way, Rand Paul's a doctor, okay? Keep that in mind, right? You know, he's an actual doctor, so he knows what he's talking about here. But he's the bad guy simply for asking the questions. This is the kind of insanity that we're seeing every day, and frankly, you know, a lot more often now since January 21st, 2021, with our new president and our new Congress and our new Senate.
Yeah, we've been talking about this a lot. I mean, the goal here is to attack the family, to attack the youth, to deconstruct faith and family, because when you do that, you deconstruct Christian civilization. So if you attack the family, there's nothing to protect the individual from the state. And that's what they're talking about. They want to have that complete and total control. I think it's absolutely horrible what's unfolding. And, you know, I just don't understand. Here's where I sit. I consider myself to be relatively rational and clear thinking. And I'm sure I'm muddy on issues at times, but this makes no sense to me at all. I mean, I cannot see anyone on the side of the aisle arguing for the Equality Act that sees it as a good thing. I mean, if you take a look at what it means for sports, you may take a look at what it means for religious freedom, for those who profess a certain belief. I mean, there are more cons than there are pros to this by any means. The Equality Act, go ahead, Doctor, I'll let you respond. Go ahead.
Well, and imagine if you're listening to this, and imagine your 17-year-old daughter, all right, she's in the state of Connecticut, and I'll pick Connecticut because this is happening in Connecticut.
Yeah.
And she's looking at a Big Ten scholarship, man, right? I mean, your tuition is $30,000-$40,000 a year, right? Yeah, this could save your family well over $100,000. She's worked really, really hard. And yet, you know, she doesn't win because the meet score shows that she did not get first place. And the fact is she got beat out by a biological boy. And you know, this is really going to hurt girls. Where are the feminists?
Yeah. Oh, I
right?
know.
I mean, this is really going to hurt girls. And on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, this reoccurred to me during the break. A lot of people probably don't know this. I know this only because I wrote a book on the faith of Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton, as a senator in New York, along with Rick Santorum, okay, was a co-sponsor of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So once upon a time, you had liberals and Democrats joining with Republicans on this issue, like you had liberals, and in fact, both Clintons sure. in the 1990s, Hillary as first lady, Bill Clinton as president, joining overwhelmingly with Republicans. I think the vote in the Senate was almost 90-10 on defining marriage as between one man and one woman. And yet, there again, in both cases, in the course of just a few years of the secular progressives' cultural revolution, they've just thrown all of that away. You know, as they've progressed forward to this brave new world now, and in the process, they've left behind religious freedom protection and like what you just said, common sense. They've left behind common sense.
Look, this is a monstrosity, and as you point out, it's not going to. Just trample on women's rights and it affects women's sports and scholarships. It affects parental rights. You heard what Dr. Levine was saying. You know, she doesn't want the parents involved. You said you need a parent's permission to get a tattoo, but you want to cut off genitalia? You don't need that. Free speech, religious freedom. I mean, rights of medical experts. Back to Levine's point here, the doctors are experts who operate with some rationality and who oppose doing this, thinking, hey, this child needs some help. He doesn't want to prescribe puberty blockers or undergo, administer hormone therapy or do something else. They could lose their license to practice medicine. So I don't know if people see it on the big picture. I mean, the title's so wonderful. The Equality Act. Who's not about equality, right? That's great.
That's what they do.
But you know what? It's going to compromise everyone from teachers to physicians to athletes. The bill specifically exempts itself from the religious freedom restoration.
That's what they did with marriage, Drew, right? Remember, they called marriage the same-sex marriage brigades. They came up with the phrase marriage equality, right? Love wins. It's all sloganeering. Yeah. And I knew that when they went from same-sex marriage to gay marriage to calling it marriage equality, I remember telling my students, I said, that's it. They just won. That's it. You know, send up the white flag or the rainbow flag, right?
Yeah,
it's over. I mean, once you start hitting Americans with this equality stuff, they just swallow it hook, line, and sinker. And Rachel Levine, she thinks that the discrimination here might be, not against the 12-year-old boy who wants to be a girl and is considering having his parts amputated or taking hormones or whatever else. The discrimination is against the backward parents, right, who might not be sufficiently enlightened yet by gender ideology. So that's why the next real big battle for a lot of these folks is the schools. You need to start teaching kids really on when they're in kindergarten, when they're in elementary school, about gender ideology. That way, when they become parents, right, they could parent right, correctly, right out of the gate. So if their 6-year-old boy says that he thinks he'd like to be a girl, they'll know right then and there to be completely supportive. Oh, that's good, Johnny. Well, that's what you must be, right?
Well,
you take it to the schools. Yeah.
Well, Doctor, hold the thought. I had to take a short break. When we come back, Kathy in Southern California, you're on deck. We'll get you into the conversation. If you want to join us, I only have a few moments left with the good doctor, Paul Kengor. Check out his books online as well. He's got a lot of them. Dubes, I still love Doctor. I think that's a great read. But I know your latest book is out, The Devil and Karl Marx, available at all major bookstores. And, of course, you can check him out at the Center for Vision and Values as well. We'll be back with more conversation. Stay with us. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Drew Mariani Show is here for you right here.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It's good to be with you. I only got a few minutes left to hang out today. My guest, Dr. Paul Kengor. just taking a look at all that's unfolding in our culture and in our capital. We've been talking about the filibuster and the Equality Act, and I wanted to talk a little bit about Brett Kavanaugh and Governor Cuomo and so much more, but I'll have Dr. Ken Gore back to do that. We'll grab a few calls right now while we can. And, Doctor, it's great to have you with me. We'll go to Kathy, who's waiting in Southern California. She got a cutting question for you, and I love this. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, gentlemen. I did take the time to contact both my senators from my state. Both of them responded back to my emails. Both of them gave me Lavin-esque responses. Basically, I'm so glad that you're supporting me in this effort. You know, I was one of the first to spearhead this, blah, 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 blah. So, in other words, didn't bother to acknowledge that I had given them solid reasons for why I disagreed with the Equality Act. Kids can't buy cigarettes.
Wow.
They can't get their ears pierced. You can't give them an aspirin without parental permission. But cutting off your genitalia, no problem. So what else can we do since we aren't being heard by our senators and legislators?
Well said.
Yeah. Yeah. That is beautifully said. You guys should keep that audio and replay it through. That was... And it's just amazing, isn't it? I mean, how's that for democracy, right? Political representation. In fact, it's kind of like the Rand Paul, Rachel Levine questioning, right? It's like they didn't even hear, didn't even read what you said. Thank you very much for your reply. We will continue to battle for you on this important piece of legislation. It's almost comical.
But to Kathy's point, what do you do? What do you do? Just keep writing, get more people to write? What do you do?
She's in California, right? Is that right, Drew? Is she from
California? She's in California, Southern California, yeah.
I am, so that means represents us.
God bless you.
Right. Yeah. So you had two senators there who I'm not surprised by that response. I guess what you look, let me say this, you still gotta do what you did. And you still have to go out and, you know, voice your complaints, voice your objections. It maybe even on social media if you want to, though be careful with that, right? You could maybe get fired for what you might say about this.
Right.
So, I mean, do whatever you can with caution and prudence to try to make things better. I wish I could give you a solution and tell you this is what you got to do, but it's hard. And yeah, I say all the time, this is why I think America is, you know, the culture is just going to hell in a handbasket. But I'll quote one of my favorite quotes from G.K. Chesterton. Hope is about having hope when things seem hopeless.
Amen.
And as Catholics here in this world, we're called to at least resist and try to make a better world. So you do what you can, but more often than not, we're going to be frustrated. And, you know, I find myself in moments with the Eucharist and adoration, kind of having the same plea with the Lord, right? What do I do? What do I do? And sometimes I feel like the only answer I get is, well, do what you can. Take care of your family. Take care of the people around you. You know, try to have influence within the areas where you can have influence. But to some extent, you know, you're not going to be able to change these major issues. And look, the election was won. People voted the way that they did. And who's responsible for this? American voters.
Yeah,
American voters did this.
I said the same thing to my wife the other night. I was looking. It's something that really frustrated me as well. I forget what the policy or law or whatever it was. And I thought, you know, I don't blame these radicals, these crazy liberals. I don't blame. You know who I blame? I said to my wife, I said, I blame the American people. We reap what we sow.
Yeah.
You voted for this. You thought it was great for some reason, but guess what? You're going to have to eat the bad fruit that's going to come from that decision. Kathy, to your point of what you can do, I think Dr. Ken Gore is right. I think, one, you got to be persistent. Let's for every no that they give you, let's get twice the amount of letters going to them. Let them know that their constituents aren't there. I know you're outnumbered and outgunned there, and it's probably unlikely that there'll be people who will, you know, go shoulder to shoulder with you on this. So the only thing I can refer back to, I think of Poland, and Doctor, you've written about this, you know all about it. I mean, when communism, atheistic communism, prevailed over the people there, they turned to God and they prayed, you know, and in the end, prayer does bring about change. Sacrifice and suffering, what we're going through now, can be meritorious and it can be efficacious. And I never want to diminish that because I think prayer with action, it changes things. Prayer animates our action. So pray for their conversion.
Can I give you an example of that?
Yeah, go ahead. Please.
Yeah, here I think is an example. One of my Eucharistic adoration moment conversations on issues like some of the same-sex issues and so forth, same-sex marriage and so forth, I would find myself saying, you know, Lord, you know, you founded this church. Could you give us some help? Could you please? Because maybe from the Vatican, could please, I know I'm sounding disrespectful here, but could you help us out? We're getting confusion from our Pope on this question. Could you please do something? And then lo and behold, yesterday morning or the day before, I wake up and I find out that Pope Francis's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith came through for us and clarified where they stand on same-sex unions. And so I went back to the Eucharist that afternoon and I just sat down and I said, thank you. Right. Sometimes we get a break. Now that said, is the country going to change on that issue, and are they going to throw the redefinition of marriage back to the 50 states where it began and reverse Obergefell and the 50? No, it's not going to happen. It's lost. It's gone. It's done. At the national issue, the civil issue, civic issue, as the state issue, it's over. We lost that one. But still, you can do what you can within the church and within your own family and with your own community to try to make things better.
Yeah, you're so right. Well, Doctor, I want to thank you for being here. It is always a delight to get connected. And there's so much more to talk about. Maybe a little bit later we can talk about Brett Kavanaugh and Governor Cuomo and all that we are seeing. I know you do a lot of writing, and people want to follow you, or if you've written something recently, how can they get connected?
Yeah, I write for American Spectator. So just look me up, Paul Kengor, the American Spectator. I'm a senior editor, columnist there, and I write pretty frequently, too, for Crisis Magazine and National Catholic Register. And my books are on Amazon, so you can check out any of those. And also the Institute for Faith and Freedom at Grove City College.
Amen to that. Dr. Paul Kengor's last name is K-E-N-G-O-R, so you can do a quick search for him. Paul, we'll catch up again soon. Thanks for making so much time for us.
All right, Drew. Thanks. Take care.
Thank you. That's Dr. Paul Kengor. Look, I'm up against the clock and out of time. I want to thank you for allowing me to be part of my afternoon. Before I wrap it up, I just want to give you a quick programming note. I know I've mentioned this maybe a couple times. This might be the first time you hear it. We have Relevant Radio, something they want to offer to you absolutely free, and it's a book that I wrote. This is a book that I think has in it a secret that will help change the problems we're facing in our country. You know, Kathy called very eloquently saying, hey, what do I do? You know, I believe in the power of prayer. The Chaplet of Divine Mercy is one of those extraordinary prayers that the Lord gave such unbelievable promises to. It held back an angel of wrath set to destroy a city. It has brought about the conversion of some of the most hardened sinners you could ever imagine. I wrote a book that talks about God's mercy and why it's so needed. You know, he told St. Faustina in this book that he said that the world will not have peace, he told St. Faustina, until it turns with trust to my mercy. And he warned the world. He says, I first come as a just judge. You know, first I come as a, he says, before I come as a just judge, Before I come as a just judge, I first come as a merciful Savior. But woe to those of you that do not recognize this time of my visitation. I take a look at what the Lord told Faustina about the times in which we're living, about what he said about a second coming, about what looms in the not too distant future. I talk about the need for mercy today, the times that Faustina faced. She faced very, very troubling times. This is a book meant for our time. This is a devotion meant for this very moment in which you and I live. And the book is completely free for you. Relevant Radio is printing it, and they are going to pay for the shipping and handling and send it to your door. I am proud of this work. I've done a lot of different works over my career. But this one in particular, I think God really wanted me to be part of. And this will enrich your spirituality. It'll deepen your relationship with God. It did that for me. It'll arm you with the secrets of the spiritual life that will help you overcome anxiety and fear and disappointment and frustration and all those things we face when we look at the problems in the world today. And believe me, we are living in a whirlwind. This will keep you anchored. This will keep you centered. And it's yours free. This is all you've got to do. Just go to relevantradio.com. and sign up for it right now. RelevantRadio.com or use your mobile app, okay? And there are no strings. I mean that. No one's going to harangue you. It's free shipping, free handling, and it gets sent right to your doorstep. So go right now, RelevantRadio.com. Lots of other treasures in this book. In fact, I'm even going to give you an image of Divine Mercy 4x6 that you can take out and you can frame. And I do a whole chapter on this, and I talked about it a couple of days. Extraordinary promises with the image that the Lord asked that be painted. It's the image that he appeared to Faustina in as the resurrected Lord. And there's this incredible tie, this connection to the burial cloth of Christ known as the Shroud of Turin. I share that story and so much more. Hey, I'm out of time for the day. Cale Clark is coming up. Don't forget, relevantradio.com. I'll be back again tomorrow. Until then.